Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 108 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyra, your host, as usual. Today I have an extraordinary guest, in my opinion, Douglas Lusk. Now, Doug is the principal and the founder behind something called the National Society for Legal Technology, and more specifically, a product called the Legal Technology Certificate. And what Doug did, which is remarkable because, as you will hear, he developed this while he was working as a paralegal and while he was going to law school. But he's developed a certification program that provides a track or a curriculum for law students or lawyers to get certified using a host of legal technology, and to do so in a way that protects the data of the law firm, as an example, and also doesn't require the participant to invest in all of the individual software packages in order to gain training opportunities within those packages. So, what are we talking about? As you'll hear, it's a program that provides training in things like Adobe Acrobat, Excel, Outlook, and Word, so you know, kind of standard office management tools, but also specific legal technologies such as NetDocuments, TimeMap, Trial Director, Sanction, those kinds of things. So put those all together and you get a certification program for legal technology, which addresses the challenge that we all have as attorneys to how do I comply with the new ethical rules requiring competence in technology, and yet there aren't any resources available to me through my bar association or my law school to help me achieve that competency. Well, Doug has figured it out. And not only has he addressed the problem, it is thriving. And as you'll hear, it's being included in as the curriculum and the certification program in upwards of 70 law schools to date and a whole bunch of bar associations. And I think it's just going to grow and grow and grow. And I think he's on the cusp of something really big. So I'm delighted to be able to introduce you to Doug Lusk. Douglas Lusk, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Well, I'm happy that you were able to make time for us today, Doug. Tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Okay. Well, my name is Doug Lusk. I live in Studio City, California. I am a litigation paralegal for many years. I'm also currently in my last semester of law school, counting down my final days to graduation in May.
Awesome. Good for you.
I look forward to sitting for the bar. Be happy when that hurdle is done and over.
Yeah, not too many people look forward to sitting for the bar. They look forward to that being behind them.
You're right. Especially I'm sitting in California with all the controversy going around of the low pass rates. It's got me a little extra paranoid. So, but I'm sure it's going to go well. So I'm thinking all positive thoughts.
Good.
Doing lots of extra prep. So that keeps me off the streets these days. As a litigation paralegal, that kind of introduced me to the way that law firms were working and got me excited about going into law school. and put me on that path. And I got in law school and realized they weren't teaching anything about legal technology. But having worked in a law firm, I knew that everything in a firm functions around technology. And it seemed odd. I was just going, how can law firm function so much on technology? And you get to a law school and there is nothing. They don't implement it into the classes. It wasn't part of the curriculum. They just ignored it. And so after my first law class, I went up to the professor and went, hey, I'm looking at my schedule and just not seeing where they're teaching technology. And he's going, yeah, you know, they don't do that. Wow. Okay. Well, that's a really bad plan. So, yeah, we kind of started talking and throwing some ideas around. And I went, you know, our school has a legal research certificate. And I went, wow, why don't we have something similar that functions with law office technology? We could develop weekend webinars. The students could drop in once a month and do a little 1 hour, 2 hour class all through law school. And when they're done, they would have a legal technology certificate and have the tools that they needed to be ready to practice when they got into a firm. And just kind of took that idea and we developed it. And kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger and realized it didn't function on a single school level because we couldn't get attention from the technology companies. The software companies didn't care about one school. And so I started putting more resources together and finding students at other schools that were interested. And pretty soon we had students in 9 states. And now the software company started paying attention, started giving us some resources. I kept rewriting the curriculum, developing better tutorials, finding people out in the industry already that had resources but didn't really know what to do with them, and started putting it all under one umbrella. Now, a lot of that existed already. You get like the eDiscovery, ACEDS is already out there. There was great resources when it came to eDiscovery, but nobody wanted to talk about other software all under one umbrella. Everybody wanted to be specialized into just one category. And I always thought, you know, that isn't a really good plan. Why not have every type of technology in one place?
Under one umbrella. Place to-
One umbrella. Yeah. Why would I want to go join the Legal Time and Billing Society and the eDiscovery and then go find the trial presentation software? And there's just too many places.
Well, interestingly, our guest last week on the Law Entrepreneur, Kat Hyland, we were talking about, you know, the challenge that law schools face, that they don't address this issue. And it's more than just technology. And we're going to dive a little deeper into your specific slice here in terms of law firm technology. But law schools really don't teach you about law firms. They teach about the law.
They don't.
But not about how a law firm operates. And if that's what you want to do right out of law school, you're going to be hard-pressed. And I think a certification process such as what you've developed for the technology side could be even broader and could also involve law firm management certification, such that, because there's issues of staffing, there's issues of signing leases and paying taxes and, you know, bank accounts and all those kinds of things. So I think you're to be commended for having the vision to see a solution here, not just the problem, but the solution. And frankly, to be honest with you, Doug, you did all of this while going to law school and working as a paralegal. You know, most people don't have time to do one or the other, much less both, plus develop something like what you've done. So, more power to you. So here you are. You have this idea. You want to do the certification program. You reached out to other folks, got more states involved, were able then to get some of the software companies to pay attention to it. And then what happened? How did this come to be?
Well, so I developed this thinking this was going to be something students would do on their own outside of class. You know, I didn't imagine the schools would ever change their curriculum. And the reason law schools really ignore this topic is it's not on the bar. Right. That's the fight that I think really needs to come, and that's where I'm headed. I spend a lot of time talking to bar associations, trying to get change in that there has to be some aspect of technology that they're teaching about and testing about. We can't just turn all of these new attorneys loose that have absolutely no idea how to ethically control the technology that they're dealing with. And we do see that change coming now that the states are starting to adopt the rules of ethics pertaining to technologically competence.
Well, I think that's actually a problem. It's a good sign of awareness, yeah. But I think it's also a problem because what we've done now is we've created an ethical responsibility to be technologically competent.
Right.
But then the next question was, how do I get there?
Right, exactly. That was somewhere we went. So I sat on the law student division of the Ready for Practice committee, and I headed up the legal technology competence. So very long title and extremely difficult to fit onto a business card. But one of our tasks were, okay, so we see this new rule come along to the ethics, but what does it mean? Nobody knows how to decipher what it, I mean, all it says is there's a duty to be technologically competent. But, well, that means very different things to different people.
To me, it's just a great big pothole into which I might step and suddenly find myself in trouble.
Exactly. And I go around lecturing about that exact topic because the first question everybody goes is, well, wait, how do I know when I'm not? And how do I know when I am? And what shows? It's just that big, what's the word for it? I mean, it's like a big pothole, like you said, yeah. that people can fall into. And so when you do something wrong, this is a place that the bar can come along and go, oops, you fell in this hole. I'm going to label you as not competent, and here you go. Here's your violation. But they don't say, well, how do you meet that? How can you show that you are doing everything you can to be competent and to meet that requirement when there's so many places that you could fail without even knowing that you're failing?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting to me also that when we talk about law firm and legal technology, that in my humble opinion, just anecdotally from what I've seen going around various conferences around the country, the one area that gets the most exposure, and you mentioned it earlier, is e-discovery. And so there's a whole lot of information and a whole lot of thinking going along in the e-discovery world. And that's great, as it should be. But to me, that's just one slice of the pie. And it's a part of the practice of law that may not really affect me as a solo practitioner if I'm not doing a lot of that type of litigation that would require me to adhere to the e-discovery rules. What to me is more important is, how do I use my word processor? And what things about it do I need to be careful of from an ethical and a professional responsibility standpoint? I got this thing on my computer. It came with the computer. I think it's called a spreadsheet of some sort, spreadsheet software.
Correct.
I know I can do things with it, but I don't know what. And all these other tools. So my understanding is from what you've done, that's kind of part of the curriculum that you are addressing.
That is, yeah. We try to create a very well-rounded attorney and paralegal. The idea was to teach them software that was going to be able to handle any task they're going to face when they get into a law firm. So we teach them basics dealing with spreadsheets. They learn Excel. We deal with Word. We teach them Outlook, PowerPoint. We go into sharing documents with Workshare, cover things like iManage, NetDocuments, dealing with security issues as far as encrypting documents. NetDocuments is something a lot of people are not doing, is dealing with document encryption. Also having aspects in there, like trial presentation software, which is what really sparked my interest into legal technology. We went to court with a case, and we were playing defense going up against the Department of Justice, and they got up, did their presentation using Trial Director, and just wowed the judge. And by the end of their presentation, the judge is just sitting there nodding his head going, yeah, you know, they're totally guilty. And I'm, you know, the attorney leans over to me. He's like, can you do that, what they just did? And I'm going, nope.
It's so funny you said, I'm going to share with you my own personal story here, almost identical. And it's embarrassing because I should know better. I like to pride myself as a tech weenie. And I went into a divorce merits hearing, which essentially a divorce trial. And my good friend, she'll love hearing her name on the podcast, Gia Shepherdson. She was the attorney for the other side. And she presented this elaborate spreadsheet presentation to the judge on the division of marital property. And the judge turned to me and said, Mr. Tyre, how about your spreadsheet? And I went, oh, man. And that was it. That was it for our case. So similar experience.
Yeah. And that was the end of the first day. I had my trial presentation, or my PowerPoint presentation, with all of our evidence, which I thought was pretty good. It stepped up, actually, the way my firm was doing it. They would just put the documents up in a PDF, and it was clunky to move from document to document. And so, you know, I came along, I thought it was pretty good. My attorneys that I report to thought it was a big step up. I was, you know, their ace card.
You took them up to PowerPoint, but then the opposite side, you know, their presentation package was on steroids.
Right. So the end of day one, we walked out of court. The attorney turns to me. He's like, for day two, I want you using that software. And then he turned and walked his direction to his car. And I went home and loaded up Trial Director onto my computer and Googled and YouTubed every video I could find, which brought me to another big problem with the industry, is there are no resources for learning how software worked. There's such a void right there alone. If you've ever tried to learn new software, you watch the software from the companies, and it's more promotional video than it is educational. And you're going, okay, I've already bought the software. Quit trying to sell me on it. Just teach me how to use it. And it's horrible material. So I spend a lot of time calling up software companies going, hey, you really got to find some better material than this, because I have no idea how your software works. And this isn't teaching me. So that was a big problem we set out to solve, is going, great. So I just bought new software. I'm excited to implement it into my firm. How do I figure out how to use it? And where do I go to figure out how to use it? And so that's where we went, going, okay, you know, you just bought Trial Director. How do you use it? We simulate the software in the browsers. You're allowed to kind of walk through it step by step. You're not goofing up any real documents, which was another problem. There was one day I was training a new paralegal on software and was teaching them how our time and billing software worked. And so I'm doing, you know, I made a little fake case, and they were in there creating time and adding documents and playing around and really getting their hands on it. And the next month, we went to put out our billing, and we were finding things all over the place where this trainee thought that they were playing in a sandbox, and they had uploaded time charges and mileage and billing, and it was on 45 clients where they thought the whole thing was disconnected and they could do whatever they wanted. And it was great. They certainly learned how the software worked, but I mean, we were untangling that mess for weeks, trying to find what was the legitimate charge and what was our new trainee playing with the system.
This episode of The Law Entrepreneur is sponsored by Daylight. Daylight is the Mac CRM and case management tool I've been using for years to manage my practice. If you're feeling swamped trying to keep track of cases and clients, but you don't want to pay the hefty price tag of something like Salesforce or other legal-specific tools, I recommend you give Daylight a look. Daylight helps me prioritize my day. It helps me keep track of my clients, cases, documents, emails, calendars, to-dos, and reminders, all in one place. The case management part of Daylight makes it really easy to organize all the details and work for each case so things are done on time. The best part of Daylight is that it lets you work offline. You don't need an internet connection to pull up case details or info about a client like with other CRMs and case management tools. And new in Daylight is their Zapier integration, so you can automate things like pulling new leads from a contact form on your website right into Daylight. And for techies like me, you know that integration with tools like Zapier is really fundamental to making something like Daylight work the way you want it to work. So to learn how Daylight can help you grow your practice, visit marketcircle.com/daylight. And be sure to let them know you heard about Daylight through The Law Entrepreneur to get a 50% discount on your first month subscription. That's Daylight by Market Circle. This episode is also brought to you by my friends at Spotlight Branding. I trust them to manage the internet presence for my law firm, and I recommend them to solo lawyers every chance I get. They built a great website for me, and they use video marketing, social media, email marketing, and more to keep me top of mind with my referral network. Visit spotlightbranding.com to learn more. They're even offering a free gift for podcast listeners, which you can access at spotlightbranding.com/TLE, as in The Law Entrepreneur. Spotlightbranding.com/TLE, brought to you by our friends at Spotlight Branding. Well, let's take a step back now then for a second, because we've touched on so many aspects of what the National Society for Legal Technology provides as a technology training resource for legal professionals. You make this resource available to both law students, and it has kind of a one flavor, so to speak, for law students, as well as for legal professionals, principally solos and small or individual attorneys, right?
Right. Yeah. So yeah. We started with law students, and we started building this as a tool for law students to learn. And so after I went to a legal educators conference for paralegal students and was showing it off, trying to get schools to get their students to do this on their own. And I had one school that went, yeah, you know, this is great, and our textbook is horrible. So we're going to throw out the textbook, and we're just going to take this into the classroom as classroom curriculum. And that started a snowball that within 12 months, we had 70 schools drop their textbook and take our certificate program into the classroom as part of a law management technology or law office technology class or law practice management. And it just... it just started spreading. They just started talking.
And now where are you in terms of number of law schools?
Well, so that's where we are today, is at 70. We just had our first school pick us up a year ago.
That's good growth.
It is.
By anybody's measure.
It's a good sign that we hit on building a good tool. That's what I saw as.
The other thing that I think is remarkable about this platform is that you had the foresight to be able to hook in the vendors, the software providers, such that you have working applications under your browser window, so that, in this case, students, they don't have to go and invest in $10,000 worth of legal software to get this certification.
Right. Yeah.
They get to use real versions of the software under the browser window and become trained on and proficient in a variety of packages without having to make that expense. I think that's brilliant, frankly.
Yeah, that was a big problem that the schools were having. They're going, we're surviving.
Where are we
going
to get all the money to buy all the software?
Yeah. Yeah, they didn't have that kind of budget, so they were teaching Word and Excel.
Yeah, okay, Doug, you're not tooting your horn loud enough. I want you to tell me whose brilliant idea it was to make that capability available through a browser.
Yeah, so that's the schools came to me and said, here's our problem. And I went, you know what? There is a better way to do this. Yep. We can do it in by simulating the software. You're not having to deal with downloads. So that was an idea that I came across I can fix this.
Good for you.
I can fix this problem and we can take away this frustration that's there.
And just as a segue, it is the same concern that managing partners and solo practitioners have with respect to doing the same thing within their law firm. I don't want to have to buy the software to learn how to use it.
Right. Yeah.
So you've solved the problem on that side of the fence as well.
And then we also walk them through step by step. We design the curriculum and put it in order where they start assuming they've never seen the software before. We walk them through step by step, all the way up to being an expert in that software. Because a big firm, they have an in-house trainer. That in-house trainer is going to sit down, do classes. You don't have that when you're in a solo firm. You don't have that when you're in a firm under about 50 people. Right. They don't have those types of resources. And I sat there and went, you know what? That doesn't make sense. Because, you know, if you look at the demographics of what firms are made up of, I was talking to Texas, and 50% of their attorneys are in a firm less than 8 people. So 50% of the attorneys out there don't have those resources.
Right.
And I went, wow, that's a huge problem. Okay, how can I fix that? So then we went, okay, what if I create the curriculum for them? What if I walk them through and lay it out going, here is what you need to know. Here's the different tasks. Because you don't know what you don't know. That's the biggest thing. You can find anything out there on YouTube. There's a million videos. You could probably Google and find what you need to learn about. But where is it laid out showing you what it is you should be searching for? How do you know that you don't understand that, hey, if I click the copy and paste button twice, it holds down and I can copy my format over and over with one single click?
Right.
I didn't know that existed, so I didn't know to go look for it. So those are things that we build into our tutorials so that you're seeing many things like that where it is minuscule tasks that maybe you didn't know functioned that way.
Well, yeah, and it's the thing people always want to know. They want to know, hey, what's the cool tip that I can use to make my life more productive and therefore more profitable? Now, one of the challenges I suspect that you have is that the software underneath this umbrella training program, you know, some of it is general purpose software, such as things like, you know, Excel or PowerPoint, but some of it is legal specific. Trial director, correct, as an example, and sanction. Yeah. So in developing the curriculum, how did you straddle that those competing, you know, issues? Because it's easy to go down the rabbit hole of here's some whiz-bang features in Excel that come to find out, generally speaking, an attorney would never use.
Right. And there are a lot of features like that, especially when we are working on PowerPoint. And there's great features where you can put a whiteboard into your slides where you can write on it. And then it's like, you know what, when are you going to use this as an attorney? It's a great feature, but I'm not going to sit there in court and write on my slides for PowerPoint. Right. It just isn't something I'm going to do. But implementing a video in there where maybe I have a piece of a deposition that I want to cut into, you know, those were things we needed to do. So there was a lot of research into seeing what firms are doing. I made a lot of site visits and sat and watched a lot of law firms. I went and sat in court, watched what are the presentations doing? What does the pieces of evidence look like? Tools like that. So we also looked at what software had domination of the market. And so that was how we needed to pick as to what software we needed to start teaching about, is by looking to see what are they using.
So so you definitely had that kind of planning in mind when designing the curriculum to make it specifically, you know, legal usage oriented.
Right. Yeah, that is definitely what the sole purpose was. We had our demographic in mind as to who we were really chasing. We weren't really going after that big firm attorney because they have an in-house trainer. They have the resources they need. I was chasing that solo, that 5 to 10 person firm. That was where we were after. What do they need? What are they going to use? What software aren't they using that they need to be using? Those types of
things. By sandboxing the test environment as well, you've eliminated, the third of that, problem area where, just as you say, I'm not going to screw up my database learning how to use the features of this package. So where do you go from here? What's the future hold?
Well, so our goal is to keep expanding the number of software titles that we have training on. Currently have 25 software titles that are in our professional version. And we just keep chasing different software companies trying to get the resources. It sounds like it would be easy, and we have some software companies that call me up going, here's the resources, whatever you want, we will help you with to get onto your platform. I was like, Clio. Clio is amazing when it comes to wanting to teach their people how the software works. They really care deep down about their end users. We have a software company that we reached out to going, hey, I'd love to be teaching people how your software works. And they threatened us with a lawsuit and went, nope, we charge our users for training. And so support, we are the only, And it's a big moneymaker for them. I'm going, well, that's horrible. You should be getting paid for the software you made, not for teaching them how the software works.
Exactly.
You know, it just is, it's crazy. Well, and I'm going,
They'll have to miss out on being included. Well, I think honestly, I'm not saying this just to blow smoke. I think you're on the cutting edge of what the future holds for technology and the legal profession, because it's a big problem, as you've outlined. Nobody has really come up with a viable solution of how to address it until, frankly, I think you've come along. And I think there's an opportunity for you to continue to do well, expanding it to other law schools and other legal technology tools as well.
So we have a lot of bar associations that have started conversations with us trying to figure out how to get this to be available in their Bridge the Gap program.
I think
attorneys coming out of law school going hanging their own shingle and don't know how to practice. So I think that's what we're going to see the growth is in states finally allowing CLE on software instruction directly, whereas a lot of them have been staying away from that category. And if you wanted to get a CLE on how to use Clio, they were rejecting it because they were seeing it as it was a marketing ad. It was, it was an instruction, and now they're seeing the need. And I think when I came along, they finally went, oh, here's a good independent third party that isn't tied to sales, isn't tied to self-promoting the software, really is just about, let me teach you how the software works.
Well, don't get me started on bar associations, because
or you could go all day on that topic.
I could go all day. I mean, they provide a lot of wonderful resources, but oftentimes I wonder whether or not they think that servicing the members of the association isn't really what they're supposed to be doing. And I think it's really a simple problem from their perspective. You bring on somebody with a tool such as you have here with the umbrella program, and what's the formal title, just so we can refer to it?
It is called the Legal Technology Certificate.
The Legal Technology Certificate. You bring that on and allow bar associations to make that available to their members, make it financially feasible for their members to take advantage of it, just the same way that many of them make legal research tools available to their members. You do that, and you've bridged the gap, and you're providing a service to your association members. So to me, it's a no-brainer. It's almost maddeningly simple, as far as I'm concerned, because I think you have hit on the solution, and I wish you all the best, and hopefully being here on this little podcast will help help get the word out, because I think it's a really important thing that you're doing. And on top of that, you're doing it while going to law school and working as a paralegal. I'm already exhausted, Douglas, just listening to you.
I'm looking forward to the day I can finally sleep 8 hours.
there you go. Doug, tell our audience a little bit how they can go about reaching out to you if they want to become associated more with the legal technology certificate and the tools that you have to offer.
Okay, well, they can start by visiting our website. We are at legaltechsociety.org. That will get you to check out and see what our legal technology certificate program is about for professionals. They can find us on Twitter at NSLTTech. Me personally at Lusk_Doug. Okay. They can also reach us by email at douglas.lusk@legaltechsociety.org.
Terrific. We'll have all of that in the show notes. And I wish you all the best. And I want to thank you, Doug, for coming on the Law Entrepreneur.
Thank you, Neil. A pleasure to be here.
Once again, I'd like to thank our friends at Market Circle, the makers of Daylight and Spotlight Branding, for being sponsors of today's podcast. Market Circles, as the makers of Daylight, provide the tool that I use to manage my cases, my clients, my calendar, my to-dos, the emails, and they do so all in one app that stays with me on my Mac, my iPhone, and my iPad. I use Daylight on my own in a solo environment, but you can also use it in a team. You can use Daylight to track the status of cases and delegate tasks to one another on your team, and you can see everyone's schedule all without having to interrupt anyone. Daylight is one of the tools that I use to stay organized, and it increases my efficiency, and therefore it only stands to reason that it'll do the same for you and your team if you use it in a broader environment. So visit marketcircle.com/daylight to try Daylight free for 30 days, and be sure to let them know that you heard about Daylight through the Law Entrepreneur in order to get a 50% discount on your first monthly subscription. Also, our friends at Spotlight Branding, as always, have been very helpful in sponsoring this podcast. You know, I trust them to manage the internet presence for my law firm, and I recommend them to solo lawyers every chance I get. They built a great website for me, and they use video marketing, social media, email marketing, and more to help keep me top of mind with my referral network. So visit www.spotlightbranding.com to learn more. They're even offering a free gift for podcast listeners, which you can access at spotlightbranding.com/TLE, as in the Law Entrepreneur. So spotlightbranding.com/TLE to access your free gift. And as always, make sure that you visit our website, www.thelawentrepreneur.com, to see everything that's going on with the podcast and subscribe to our newsletter so that you can stay in the know and be the first on your block, so to speak, to gain insight into what's going on here. So once again, thanks for being here this time around. I appreciate your listenership. Hope to see you again next week on The Law Entrepreneur.